Back Talk is an extension of the long-running, award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk. They need the experts for this
John,
one.
John, what did you get me into on this one? Oh, my gosh.
It had that feel to it that it could be challenging.
It's not just challenging. This is one where I went home and had to shower, I think, afterwards.
And in fact, by the time people hear this, they're probably not even around. It's called I Saw the TV Glow.
I Saw the TV Glow. This one was not even on my radar.
I know.
Went in to see this. I'm going to start right out and say, not one of my favorite movies this year, not by a long shot.
Look, I thought because of its trans theme that it would be of interest
well,
to
it
us.
Does have an LGBTQ angle to it, but of course, any good film critic is not going to just be 100% invested in any LGBTQ representation. You've got to look at the big picture. What is the character in the movie for? Does it serve a purpose? Is it well done? In this movie, the presence of the trans character is not overt. You're not even told that the character is trans, and I would debate that we don't even know for sure that the character of Maddie is trans. But that is...
Well, she does. In fact, both of them identify themselves at one small scene where they ask each other whether they like... When he asks her if she likes men or women, she says, I like girls, something
she
like that.
She says she likes girls,
right?
Yeah.
Now, and she asks him, and he evades her.
Yeah,
he says he likes TV shows.
And we'll get on him in just a second, but we don't know from that scene whether she is a lesbian or is she a transgender.
Man, I'm telling you, Ken. Ken was trying to school me in this before we did the show, and I'm lost on the terminology.
John and I, you and I are handicapped because we grew up in an era that had very limited definitions in the LGBT. The LGBTQ didn't exist in the 1970s. It didn't exist even 10 years ago. This is all new. And fortunately, the cinema is now starting to get up to speed. But this is not necessarily the movie we want to be talking about when we talk about LGBTQ film.
All I want to do is say gay. That's all I want to say. You can't do that.
You can't do that. We've got to be much, much more understanding and more knowledgeable about the LGBTQ, right, which is now expanded to additional letters. Probably we'll add a few more before it's done. However, let's get back to this movie.
I want to say something about it. I was helped through by the strong sense of the importance of a media to teenage kids. That is, media is, you know, their reality. You know, it's not everybody's reality, but it's there.
There's two things going on here. There's media, which is...
You can't even wait to get in.
I can't wait. There's media going on here, which is kids wanting content.
Yeah.
Whether that media is on their cell phones, or that media is on movies, or that media is on television for the few who still watch it on a TV screen. But there's also something called fandom. And fandom is when a group of people who all love the exact same medium or the exact same show, let's say, get together and form a relationship with each other because of their love of that show. And this movie is exploring fandom in a very strange way,
as you're describing it, this could be Seinfeld people.
This movie, the closest you can come to the TV show they're in love with is probably Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Well, right, yeah, but in the broader sense that you're talking about fandom, millions of people.
Now there's a difference there too. There's millions of people who tuned in every week for Seinfeld, for MASH,
and
All in the Family. Yeah. But that was not fandom. Fandom is when we're talking about people who actually get involved, write their own stories and publish their own stories of these characters. They do artwork of these characters, and they go to conventions immerse themselves, and they work as a community. They come together, they meet each other, and we're getting in with this movie a little snippet of that fandom in that this woman, Maddie, and I'm going to use the term woman just because we don't have any explanation if she's anything different, is obsessed with this TV show called The Opaque Pink, The Pink
is
Opaque.
It on the Adult Network at 10:30 on Saturday night. Now, his mom will not let him stay up that late.
It's 10:30 on Tuesday nights. Saturday night. 10:30 on Saturday
just
nights.
Nowhere.
Yeah. So let's talk about these characters, though. Maddie, we've already discussed, possibly a trans male, possibly a lesbian. Olympian, we don't know.
Well, but I think this movie is really about Owen, played by Justin
now,
Smith.
Now, Owen, the best way I can describe Owen is very clearly on the autism scale, probably very high up the autism scale.
He has not figured out who he is. Well, one of the things I like here is that they're not pounding out what their sexual orientation strongly is.
Nope.
For him, and why I think it helps for almost any teen, he just doesn't know who he is yet.
He's low functioning in a lot of ways.
Right.
And we have to separate, again, autism from sexual orientation because they're two entirely different things. He is definitely on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. So, and that's not uncommon in fandom also. I've been in fandom myself for over 45 years, so I know a lot of people. The problem I have with this movie is I should be identifying with these characters. Having been in fandom for so long, I should be connecting with Maddie and connecting with Owen and going, yes, I'm a Buffy fan too, and yes, I can see what they're trying to do. I don't. I don't identify with either of these characters. And I came away from this movie very frustrated and very disappointed. I really wanted these characters to be more relatable, more connectable, and frankly, I should have been the target market for this movie, and I do not connect to this movie at all.
Jane Schönbrunn, who is the director, and has had a previous big smash hit with We're All Going to the World's Fair.
I don't know how much of a smash hit it was. I've never heard of it, but apparently it has a cult following.
Among some of your fandom. this was only like 3 years ago
where
it came out. So she's well known with them. You and I have never heard of her.
Never heard of her.
We certainly will not forget her.
Never heard of anybody involved in this movie at all.
The thing that helps me through all of this, well, I'm a neophyte when it comes to sexuality in its various forms, as you would say.
And you are not alone. It's a function of the age group.
Yeah.
You know, we grew up at a time when the concepts of sexuality were very, very close, much smaller than they are today, not nearly into the shades of gray and the various categorizations that we have today. But we're a better world today for all of the changes that have come from this.
What I do see when I see the fixation that our teens have, for instance, with smartphones, and I see their fascination with the Saturday Night Show. When I see that, I see how teens can become obsessed, and I see how that helps them to identify themselves, that even at some point in the film, you got to help me, don't they two of them get into the show somehow?
The two of them, their lives are centered around the show, and in part because they don't seem to have anything else going on in their lives.
I know, right?
One of the problems I have with this movie that I actually had with a lot of shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer is there's a complete absence of an adult or a father figure in this. Hmm. None of these characters have parents that are doing their job as a parent.
Well, wait now. For Owen's mom, she's very tender and caring, though she's ineffectual, and Dad is a stereotypical male.
Right. Well, I hope not stereotypical. He's not very nice.
Well, and stereotypical in that sense that movies can portray
him. Yeah.
He's gruff. He's not tender. You begin to see why Owen just doesn't know who he is.
Look, these characters are able to work because of the absence of parental supervision and any kind of support group.
Yeah.
These are two loners, two very self-isolated people who do not have the social network that they need to be to function in a society. When you pigeonhole a character into that kind of thing, then you can develop a character that is so abnormal as to be able to make the story that you want to tell. But you're telling the story about a very abnormal person, and it's very difficult for the audience to relate to that character.
Now, the director doesn't even get into, does she, really, their relationships with the other students? Does that happen?
It's non-existent.
Yeah.
It's just non-existent.
This is where most movies like this will give you a good idea of the stark differences between straight kids, kids who follow the formula, and kids who don't.
This is a movie very much like Donnie Darko.
Yes.
Maybe Napoleon Dynamite, although I think Napoleon Dynamite did a better job of having relationships.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the only movie I could compare this to is probably Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my struggle with this movie is that the characters are so isolated and so abnormal. It is really, really difficult to relate to these characters, and it's really difficult to follow their journey. Plus, the TV show that they're into is never really well explored. So they know the show inside. Now, we don't.
How much of it do we actually see?
We get to see a few little snippets.
Yeah.
And when we first see the show, we're being told, and I will say that this director was very clearly trying to represent Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because the opening credits use exactly the same style of script as Buffy. The creator of the show is named Josh, just as Buffy was Joss. And there's a character named Tara, which was one of the four principal characters of Buffy. I will make the connection that this director was trying to emulate Buffy.
And she certainly caught the 90s with cheesy presentation.
Yes.
You know, there was nothing high about their expenditure here.
Although I will object that later on, when the character is much older, he goes back and looks at the videos of this show, and he sees that this show was nothing but a very juvenile, very campy show, which is not true of Buffy. You can go back and rewatch episodes of Buffy, and they hold up just as well today as they did when they aired in 2000.
All right, Ken, my challenge to you. I saw the TV glow. What is the TV glow?
My take on that title is it is the emotional connection that the characters have to the show. Because that connection is the strongest relationship in the entire film. The characters don't relate to each other. They don't relate to anyone outside besides the pair. Their relationship, their connection, their whole obsession is this TV show. So when I think what they're saying is, I saw the TV glow, they're talking about the feeding from the television, the way the television gives them the emotional support and the relationship that there's missing in their daily lives.
Yeah. And that's what helps me to see some redeeming value, that it does highlight for me the difficult time for teens and how they can climb on to something like a TV show or their cell phones to find out who they are. And we forget how you really don't know who you are. Now, there's some terms that this helps to highlight. For instance, new queer cinema. Have you heard that term?
I have not heard that term, and I'd be very curious what the definition
of
that.
Well, there's a film called the Teenage Apocalypse Trilogy, and I'm just doing some research on this. The term new queer cinema was thrown out there, and I thought, well, all right, I keep trying to use either queer or gay because my vocabulary doesn't go much
farther.
Well,
and you make a very interesting point, because it is the people that are younger than us who are having the easier time with the LGBTQ movement, because they've grown up with it. So we are pigeonholed into the definitions that we learned when the 70s and the 80s. But if you ask a 17-year-old or a 15-year-old what LGBTQA is and how it's defined, they're going to get a completely different and much, much broader spectrum answer than we could provide.
Thanks.
So we are not the target market for this cinema. Yeah. The target market for the cinema is much younger people who are much, much more knowledgeable and understanding of this genre than we are.
The TV show that they're obsessed with, The Pink Opaque, has an image in there that I knew, and that was the image of the moon from the Méliès brothers.
Oh, from the Méliès, yeah, the man in the moon.
Trip to the moon,
yes.
That's their
George
Mr.
Méliès.
Melancholy.
Which is apparently the overriding villain of the Pink Opaque TV show.
Because
which
there
we
are two girls who are the stars of that show, right?
Yes.
And Mr. Melancholy is
the villain.
Corralling them, yeah.
Yeah, and the two characters are Isabella and Tara. And this is one of the places where I struggle with this movie. Is Owen identifying with one of these two characters? Because we don't get that. Yeah. I think the director, who's also the writer, so I can go after her on both counts, did not do a very good job of developing Owen to the point where we could understand how Owen's thinking and what his motivations are. I'm left in this movie on the outside looking in when I should have been embracing elements of this movie.
There's some realism in this movie. One of them is that he loses Maddie for almost 10 years, I think.
There's a slight science fiction element to it here,
yes,
that perhaps the people that get really caught up in this show fall out of a normal timeline, and they begin time jumping, and they'll blink an eye and 5 years have passed.
Good one, yeah. In fact, there's something extraterrestrial about it.
Extraterrestrial or magical or science fiction-y. You know, is this movie trying to do a Videodrome on us? I don't know. It doesn't tell us enough for me to know where he's going.
Which is a long way from my obsession when I was growing up. The Twilight Zone.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's my obsession, too.
Oh, wow.
Love that classic writing, but example of classic great writing.
Yes.
Whether it was Rod Serling or one of his many other great writers, that was a show that evolved out of the powerhouse of Playhouse 90, and which produced such great things as 12 Angry Men.
And in my generation, I can talk to people like Wayne, mm-hmm. who know right away the episode I'm talking about.
You just mentioned the title, and you know,
you know they get, yeah, they got it.
They got
you know,
it.
Which is you don't have to go any further. Sterling was. That's what I use as my litmus test. Is does it come through? And it, this does not come through.
This yeah. is nowhere near the quality of the great writing of The Twilight Zone. I mean, when I was at Carnegie Mellon, in our script writing class, we all had to read the episode "The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street." Which is considered Ooh. A great piece of Cold yeah. War drama. It's only about 8 pages long, right. but one of the great, great works of Cold War drama. And we were required to read it and analyze it and talk about it. I will grant that maybe I'm completely missing something because I'm too old to relate to what this movie is about. But I don't think so. If cinema doesn't connect in some way, it's failed.
Well, there's a clarity button for me that isn't pushed here. It's not clear. It's not clear what the purpose is. What is clear to me is it does show the dilemma of young people who are trying to figure out who they are. And when it comes to sexuality, very big issue for them.
I don't know if the director was trying to go for a very niche audience, yeah. a very small number of people who yeah. are going to connect to this movie. But whatever the case, I didn't. I did not. And I tried, but I could not make any kind of relationship to what was going on work. And you know, and the funny thing is, this movie is about a nonlinear storyline because the characters jump through time, but it is the most linear chronological movie that I've seen recently anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't even achieve the intent to try to do a nonlinear storytelling.
When they get down to his relationship, Owen and Maddie, then I begin to feel more comfortable. He loves her as a friend.
Yes.
You know, and it's clear in the movie that that's what the director wanted us to feel. And because for teens, that's a relationship is gold.
And his story develops over the span of about 25 years in segments.
Yes.
But we don't see in the movie the growth over that 25 yeah. years. And we definitely do not see the character 25 years in the future that he is portrayed as being.
Yeah.
We haven't seen that evolution. She just does not do a good job writing this movie to give us any sense of growth or what direction this character has taken. There's just frustrating.
What she has done is give us one of the shortest podcasts in our history, even though we are top 10 in NPR. We're going a few minutes less than we ordinarily
than normal.
Would. And I think it's under the rubric that these guys ought to quit while they're ahead.
There's just not that much material in this movie for us to go on. I mean, we did a great job with Furiosa. Oh, we probably yeah. had 15
what
pages of dialogue in the entire movie. So we're doing a long podcast about a movie that has no dialogue at all. But this movie has dialogue, and there's just not that much to talk yeah, about right. because we just don't have the story to support anything in this movie. We're just guessing. I'm just guessing. I don't know about you, John, but I'm just guessing.
No, and what I like about the title, I saw the TV Glow, is that I grew up on the TV Glow, but I don't have it anymore.
See, I still have it. I just came from MarCon, the Columbus Science Fiction Convention.
Oh, did you really?
And
oh,
our numbers have dwindled. We've gone from 3,000 people 25 years ago to about 300.
Oh, my.
But those 300 people, it's still great to see your friends, even if it's the only time of year that you see them. And we still talk about Babylon 5, and we still talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and we still talk about these fun shows. But we've also got our families that we talk about and our friends and who's sick and who's well and who got married. So there's a much, much broader spectrum to fandom than just, oh, I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Oh, I'm really, really caught up in this show or that show. And that's what this movie does not do. It does not show you the spectrum of fandom, but it may not be intending to. It may not be trying to show anything more than two very dysfunctional people obsessing over one television show then are caught up in some kind of very strange world that of this woman's creation.
Well, I looked through the resumes of all my guests at CMU.
Well, I didn't graduate. 3 years, and then I stopped
attended,
to make a movie. I attended CMU,
say,
yes.
Who attended Carnegie Mellon
I'm
University.
Proud to say that Helen Hunt did not graduate, which makes me
oh,
almost the
did,
equal.
Had,
oh, no, she bailed on the second year.
Well, even in Facebook, if they say attended, they never say
yeah.
graduated.
Yeah.
Always,
well,
they never know for sure.
I shouldn't say this, but often the rule of thumb of drama school is if you make it through the whole 4 years, you didn't have a good agent.
Right. There you go.